Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here along with Shad Marquitz. We are your hosts for this weekend edition. Also your hosts on our website and podcast throughout the week. Trying to keep everybody as up to date as we can on macro events for the markets, but then even more so driving down into market moves and company updates. Still a lot of news coming out broadly. The problem seems to be is that every sector seems to be under a bit of pressure here. We are kicking off the show, first two segments, with our good friend Jesse Felder, founder and editor of the Felder Report. Jesse, we have to start with the Fed, whether you like it or not. We had a Fed meeting this week, and we actually saw volatility before the Fed meeting, and then even more volatility after the Fed meeting. To sum it up, the Fed hiked rates by 50 basis points, what they have been guiding for. One of the noteworthy comments from Jerome Powell is that he said that the committee really wasn't even discussing 75 basis point hikes. That's something that the market was more forcing on the Fed. Let's start there with the general Fed statement and Powell's press conference. What was your takeaway, Jesse?
Well, my takeaway was Powell just blinked, right? Powell likes to say that he's up to the task of being Paul Volcker if necessary. And he's clearly not. I mean, right now, inflation is running so high and the Fed is so far behind the curve that what he should be saying is we're going to do whatever it takes to rein in inflation, period. We are going to raise interest rates. If it causes a recession, so be it. If it causes the stock market to crash, so be it. We have to rein in inflation. And he didn't do that. By taking 75 basis points off the table, that is basically, you know, saying the opposite of whatever it takes. No, we're only willing to raise at a rate that, you know, will not crash the stock market, will not hurt the economy. So I think that you know, the market, Powell blinked, and I think that's what the markets are trying to suss out. I think probably what that means, and the bond market is really telling that story, right? I think bond investors, by selling bonds off so hard in the last few days in the wake of the Fed meeting, that's bond investors saying, wait, if you're not fully dedicated to reining in inflation, how can we buy bonds at a 3% yield? It makes no sense.
Well, Jesse, that's a great point, because with inflation at around 8.5% on the last CPI reading, even if the Fed was to hike not just 75 basis points, but let's say 100 basis points four or five times, we'd still have negative real rates for inflation adjusted rates. So I guess if you're in the bond market, you think, why would I want to hold on to something that's guaranteed to lose money? And so we've seen interest rates really spike up even higher on a percentage basis. What do you think the higher interest rates or the rising rates are going to do to other markets like real estate or to the general equities?
Well, I think, you know, what the bond market is upset with, I mean, let's try and quantify this, right? The Fed funds rate is still below 1%, right? We're still not even at 100 basis points at a time when the Taylor rule says the Fed should be over 1,000 basis points. We should have a 10% Fed funds rate today with where the economy is, with where inflation is, and all of these things. So the Fed has never been so far behind the curve. So it makes absolute perfect sense that bond investors would be paying very close attention to how dedicated the Fed is into, you know, in protecting the stable prices side of the mandate. And if Jay Powell says, we will do whatever it takes, great. Okay, maybe I can buy bonds at 3. But if they're not, then you can't buy bonds, right? Because if inflation is going to remain elevated because the Fed is dedicated to remaining behind the curve, which is the message I took from the latest Fed meeting and the message they've given for months and quarters now, you know, then you have to stay away from bonds because inflation is going to remain elevated. And really what Jay Powell's dealing with is an incredibly difficult situation, right? We're already seeing tons of signs that we're headed for recession. The oil price up 50% year over year. Every time that happens, we go into recession. Yield curve, I mean, I think we talked about all this stuff the last time I was on. Look at the relative performance of retail stocks, relative performance of small caps. Everything is pointing to recession. CNBC ran a poll this week. 80% of small businesses expect recession before the end of this year. 80%. And so because the Fed waited so long to tighten, Now they're going to be forced to tighten into a recession, into a downturn. And I just don't think Jay Powell's up to the task. I think already we're seeing slowing in the housing market because mortgage rates have ripped higher over 5% from, you know, below 3 not too long ago. So, you know, home builders, another stock that's shown significant relative underperformance leading to the downside of the stock market. All signs, you know, red flags for recession. And so, I mean, you can't blame Jay for saying, you know, I can't now tighten. I can't normalize policy. If they were to go to 3% on the Fed funds or 3.5, like some have been talking about, and, you know, roll off $2 to $3 trillion on the balance sheet, it would crash the markets, would crash the economy. He knows this, which is why he backed off, at the meeting from saying those things, because he knows he can't afford to do that.
Yeah, the fact of the matter is the markets and the economy are addicted to all of this free money because they've had it for so long, and that's what helps support markets and economies when you just keep bumping that money out. We're in a different environment right now. One more question regarding interest rates, though. Even though 3% is way behind the curve, it is generally higher than the rest of the world. And the way that a lot of big money managers are set up is that they need to have some money in sovereign bonds. It does make the U.S. look more attractive, though, doesn't it? Even though it's lagging behind general inflation.
Well, absolutely. And this is why the dollar's been so strong is one, you know, we've had some of the high, you know, higher interest rates. I mean, you look at Japan and Europe and you go, I can't, you know, I mean, it's silly. So U.S. nominal rates look much more attractive than those other areas around the world. And the other side of that is the Fed has outlined through forward guidance a very hawkish path, right? I mean, they are talking about going to, you know, 2.5-3% on Fed funds in a very short period of time. They've talked about, rolling $2-3 trillion off the balance sheet. And so relative to other central banks, I mean, relative to the Bank of Japan, it's a joke. The Fed is off the charts hawkish. And relative to the ECB, they're relatively hawkish. And so if you were to say who's protecting the purchasing power of the currency better, you'd have to say it's the Fed right now, at least in talk, at least in terms of forward guidance. Now, at some point, and I think, you know, we're very rapidly approaching this point, the Fed is going to be, you know, tasked with, okay, follow through on that guidance and risk crashing the stock market, risk, you know, exacerbating a very deep recession. And, you know, the Jay Powell's going to either have to say, yes, I'm Paul Volcker and I'm going to do this, or no, we can't afford to normalize policy. And at that point, I think gold is already kind of sniffing out that Powell blinked at this meeting. And that's why, you know, the gold price has kind of bottomed and rebounded over the last few days. But if he officially pivots, I think before he does, the dollar and the gold price will already have sniffed that out and have, you know, the dollar rolled over and the gold price broken out to new highs.
Well, Jesse, it's interesting you bring that up because I was going to ask you how the dollar was possibly affecting commodities as we've seen the dollar shoot higher. And it has shot to a couple year high recently, currently up at 103.63. It's pressured the commodity sector, which was ripping higher, not just on supply chain and not just on Ukraine, but just on the inflation. So a lot of things pushing energy higher, the base metals higher, agricultural products higher, but they have rolled over some as the dollar strengthened. Do you expect that dollar to top out soon? And do you think that would coincide with the rebound in the commodity sector?
I do. I think if we are headed for recession, the dollar's going to top out just because the Fed's going to be forced to, rein in the hawkish talk. I mean, you look at the last time the dollar put in a major peak in, you know, late 16, early 17, and the economy started weakening into the, you know, late 2018 dollar rolled over and put it in an important low. I think we're approaching kind of a similar scenario, from a technical standpoint, that the dollar's back to those highs of late 16, early 17, and running into technical resistance there. But I think when Jay Powell doesn't just blink, but does pivot, the dollar's going to roll over. And So then commodities are kind of interesting at that point, right? Commodities have been really strong, even in the face of a strong dollar, which is very impressive. I mean, it tells you, tells me how strong demand for, you know, commodities are, and how strong the fundamentals are in terms of supply and demand. But if we go into recession, right, that's not a great thing for commodities. But if you get a rollover in the dollar, it could, you know, help limit some of the damage to commodities prices if they roll over together at the same time. I think generally longer term, commodities are still undervalued. The supply demand dynamic is still very bullish. But we could see, you know, like just like in any bull market, you know, a two steps forward, one step back type of thing. And that might be what we see in commodities going forward, as they've had, you know, a bunch of steps forward off the lows, you know, 18 months ago or whatever. And you know, we might be due for some type of a correction.
Jesse, even after this run in commodities, you can still make the argument, as you just did, that commodities are undervalued compared to financial assets, even though financial assets are under even more pressure. But commodities have been undervalued for more than a decade now. Why has this happened? Why is this hanging around for so long, even after the recent bump in commodities?
Well, I mean, it goes back to the capital cycle, right? When commodity prices are high, it's just, you know, the remedy for, you know, high prices is high prices, and vice versa, right? When you get high prices, the greed that it stimulates among producers is, unstoppable. They go produce as much as they possibly can. Market gets oversupplied, and that takes years to work that out. And vice versa, on the other side, we've had a commodity price crash, right? Oil prices went negative. We had all commodities in the toilet for a number of years. The gold price crashed from 2011 to 2015. And that instills a lot of discipline, right? I mean, nobody wants to invest in expanding supplies when prices are in the dumps. And so that takes years to work itself out too. And we're still seeing, I mean, look at like energy, right? Oil prices are still really high. And, you know, some people are saying it's discipline that's holding back the oil and gas producers. It might just be that, you know, a lot of the shale plays aren't as prolific, you know, in terms of being able to produce as a lot of people have assumed. And so, you know, you look at like drilled and uncompleted wells and those types of things, and those numbers are in free fall. So we might need much higher commodities prices and sustained for a long period of time to really kind of create that type of supply response you normally see that helps put in a peak for commodities. I think really the only thing to realize right now is we're nowhere close to that time. We're not seeing any producers in any of these things get to a point where they're able to create a supply response to prices.
Jesse, I think that's a solid point, because there's been chronic underinvestment in the oil and gas space for over a decade, as banks were told not to invest in them, as ESG companies said, let's stay out of that. You know, they killed coal. They didn't want to touch uranium. And we've seen all those energy sources now spiking. So now people are finally investing in projects, but it does take time to get them back online. Same thing with the base metals. But one of the metals I think we should talk about is gold. You'd mentioned it briefly earlier, but the precious metals are a little bit different category of commodity, because they really are monetary metals. They're really money itself. And so they tend to react as a safe haven. Gold has done well overall, all things considered, but it has pulled back quite a bit. And you mentioned you thought it may just start bouncing recently after this Fed kind of blinking. What do you think, I guess, in the medium term, the picture is for gold, and what will get more interest into the sector to maybe push it out and break it out to new highs?
Well, I was just asking, I literally just got off recording a podcast myself with my friend Fred Hickey, who's one of the, you know, he writes the high tech strategist, but he's easily as brilliant when it comes to investing in precious metals as with high tech stocks. And so, we were just talking about this, and he makes a great point that, the biggest buyers of precious metals, you know, physical, are, you know, Indians and Chinese. Chinese are in lockdown. And the Indians, you know, really follow a seasonal pattern. And so that's why gold prices kind of follow a seasonal pattern. And it goes, we're in the weak period for seasonal strength right now. And it doesn't improve until late summer, August, something like that sometime. And, you know, so that's one factor. I think the biggest factor, though, in my opinion, I mean, I to be honest, I look at the gold strength. Look at the gold price over the last 6-9 months. It's up. At the same time, the dollar has been ripping higher. I mean, gone essentially parabolic, the dollar has in the last couple of months. And what's driving the dollar? It's those higher interest rates here in the U.S., which are actually now becoming less attractive because the cost of hedging against currency exposure is becoming so expensive, especially for Japanese. So, you know, that's being limited some. But it's also just, like I mentioned, Fed policy, right? The dollar strength comes back to the Fed outlining the most hawkish tightening path that we've seen since Paul Volcker. Essentially, the dollar is pricing in that we have Paul Volcker at the helm again today. And I think when the markets come around to the idea that Jay Powell is no Paul Volcker, the dollar is going to reverse, and that hawkish rhetoric, rising interest rates, all of these things that have been holding the gold price back are going to lift and they're going to go away. I think we're probably close to a top in yields as well because of a lot of this. And so if that's the case, then, you know, gold could be, and technically it looks like this too, that we've had a breakout out of its, you know, consolidating phase, that kind of pennant pattern. You know, we broke out to new highs and now the price has fallen back to test that breakout. It's just a classic breakout, test, and go. And now I think we're just looking at that go phase for gold, which will be, I think a very strong up phase for the gold price over the next, you know, few years.
It really has been encouraging to see gold really set up a higher trading range right now, a historically higher trading range. The problem being the stocks are really struggling, though, especially the juniors and the mid-tiers. We saw some pretty significant production and cost misses just this week from earnings from some of the mid-tiers. And Newmont, largest miner, it was at all-time highs, but has pulled back from there. Why are the stocks so weak then, Jesse, if gold is looking so good?
Well, I think there's two reasons. One is, you know, margin compression, right? We've seen the gold price correct for 2 years now, something like that. So top line has been, you know, not as strong because the gold price has not been not as strong. And at the same time, you know, expenses have been rising along with everybody else. I mean, you know, diesel costs, employment costs, all of these things are rising. And so margins have been come under pressure. And I think that just goes through phases, right? I mean, we could see a time ahead when margins, you know, rapidly expand, and that's just would come through top line growth and then, you know, resolving of some of these kind of margin pressures, expenses. But I think really the main thing with the gold stocks, the problem that they have is I think investors are doubting that gold is still in a bull market. And when you look at how, you know, cyclical, because the stocks are incredibly cheap, you know, you look at my favorite right now is Agnico Eagle, and it's trading at probably about a 50% discount to its historical valuation. And the only way a stock should trade that cheap is if you were at the top of the cycle, right? If you think about cyclical companies, their earnings look great at the top and look terrible at the bottom. So you really should only be willing to pay a, you know, kind of a low PE at the top, and you want to pay, you know, when the stocks look cheap, the price earnings ratio looks really high because earnings are so depressed. And so I think people look at the gold miners, see they have low PEs, but they're like, yeah, but we're at the top of the cycle. And if the gold price rolls over, earnings are going to get destroyed. And so I can't own the miners. But if it's my belief that we're not near the top of the cycle in the gold price, in fact, it's just the opposite. There's so many things that I look at in terms of gold. I mean, look at gold relative to the money supply. It's just as cheap as it was in 2015 at the lows relative to the money supply. You look at the commitment of traders report and look at gold producers, breakout producers, and they're literally selling forward the least amount of product that they have since 2018 and 2015, 16 before that. So you have the smart money, the smartest of smart money, selling, you know, hey, we're not going to hedge any production. We're that confident in higher prices, over the next several quarters that we don't need to sell forward any product. So, I mean, there's so many things that tell me we're not anywhere near the top of the cycle in the gold price that the stocks are not value traps, you know, in which they would be cheap for a very good reason. I think they're unduly cheap. And, when the gold price breaks out to new highs, the miners, you know, are going to double, triple, quadruple the performance of the gold price just because they're so cheap right now.
Well, Jesse, I'm sure some of the listeners hearing those comments are going to be happy to hear that, as they may sit in some of those undervalued mining stocks right now. I know some of us sure do. But I guess just as a thought on the what you're doing currently, until we see this Fed policy play through and until we see that potential Powell pivot, how are you playing the markets currently? Where are you putting your capital to work, or are you going to cash right now? What's your strategy in the short to medium term?
Well, I think because I've been, you know, obviously it's going to be a Powell pivot that's going to be the catalyst for much higher gold prices. And I think we're getting very close to that point. And like I said, I think he blinked at the last meeting, and because he, you know, demurred from saying, you know, we are not going to do whatever it takes. I mean, that's the what you can read between the lines. We're not willing to do whatever it takes to rein in inflation. So before he actually pivots, gold price will have already broken out. So I think right now we're probably very close to an important low in the gold price, just because I think we're now transitioning from this time when Powell blinked to where he's actually going to pivot. And the dollar is very close to a top. I mean, this week could be an important top. We'll look back at you know, all the headlines we've seen about dollar strength, and I've seen it everywhere. You know, the importance of this Fed meeting as, you know, one of those times you look back and I go, well, of course the dollar topped out. That was the last hawkish meeting. You know, because I think we'll see over the next month, it's one of the reasons why I believe interest rates could be close to topping out too, is that we're going to get more and more data. And the first quarter already showed negative real growth in GDP. If it becomes clear that this current quarter is going to be another two consecutive quarters of negative real growth, more and more people are going to start worrying about recession. You know, we've already had Ken Rogoff, you know, came out and said recession's already foregone conclusion. It's just, you know, how deep is it going to be? And I think you have a lot of former Fed officials, whether it's Dudley or, you know, whatever. The idea of the soft landing is absurd. So more markets are coming around to the idea that we're already headed for recession. And as we get more and more data that confirms that, it's going to put pressure on the dollar. It's going to put, you know, potentially a bid under bonds. And it's going to make it more and more obvious that Powell is getting ready to pivot.
All right, Jesse, we're wrapping it up here. A lot of recession talk continues, and rightfully so, as we are seeing markets continue to break down. And it's dragging a lot of other asset classes down with it. And now we're also seeing weaker economic data. So not a pretty picture this year for markets or the economy. We'll see if the Fed switches course sooner rather than later. We'll see if we get a little reprieve from all this bad data. But right now, it's been a tough start to the year. Jesse, thank you, as always, for your time. It's great having you on the show. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend. And we'll chat again next month.
Thanks, guys. Talk soon.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.